podcast land, and welcome to our first ever Oscar category spotlight. We at the Front Row have been breaking down all of the movies nominated for Oscars, and now we're getting to the nitty-gritty. It's the start of Oscar week, and we are going to break down the big eight categories, starting with this one, which is adapted screenplay. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me tonight is
Jay Hoffman
and Craig McFarland.
Welcome, gentlemen. Tonight we are talking about adapted screenplay. We've got five films nominated in this category. They are The Irishman, written by Steven Zillion, based off the book I Heard You Paint Houses by Charles Brandt, Jojo Rabbit, written by Taika Waititi, based on the novel Caging Skies by Christine Lewins, Joker, written by Todd Phillips and Scott Silver, based off Batman comics, written by Bob Kane, Little Women, written by Greta Gerwig, based on the novel by Louisa May Alcott, and The Two Popes by Anthony Martin, based on his play, The Pope. To be fair, this is my third recording of the night, so that is why I can't read.
A little behind the podcast here. It is currently 10:20 at night, and Ryan goes, do you guys really want me to read off, like, you know, the whole thing, like who wrote it and what it was based off of? And Jay just goes, yeah, I think you should be right. So really, this is all Jay's fault.
So thanks, Jay, for making me sound like an idiot. And the two of the podcasts I did tonight, I sounded flawless. And now here we are.
I think this one might be released first, too.
It is. So anyway, you'll hear me get better.
All right. It can only get better.
The way we're going to break down these categories is we're going to give our overall impressions of the category, and then one of our hosts is going to break down each movie as a whole. Then we're going to talk about snubs that we should have gotten nominated and end with our who will win, who should win. So our adapted screenplay, gentlemen, what do we think? Jay, go ahead.
So far, of all the only one I haven't seen is Jojo Rabbit, so I don't have to say the director's name, thankfully.
Taika Waititi.
But of the other four, Little Women, Irishman, Two Popes, and Joker, I personally enjoyed all of them very thoroughly, and I this one's not as sexy as the original screenplay category where we were just gushing over all of them. But I think there's a couple standouts in the bunch as we get into it.
Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo a lot of that. I have seen Jojo. And personal feelings aside, Jojo was just a movie that I understand why people thoroughly enjoyed it. It just wasn't my cup of tea, but that's totally fine. If you look at some of the major pieces here, we're talking about really concrete stories that are coming forward. We've got the classic of Little Women that's been adapted for screen. I don't know, is this the fourth time now or is this the third time?
Fourth or fifth.
Is it the fourth or fifth? And then we also have, Ryan and I did the whole Oscar spotlight on the two popes and this story that for the first time in 700 years, we have two popes right now. And that's kind of a crazy story to also adapt. Joker, it obviously one of the best comic villains in all of history. So even if I may not necessarily have enjoyed the direction that Todd Phillips brought it, great adapted piece, right? So Irishman, this is a story about the man who basically claims that he killed Jimmy Hoffa. And again, we don't know if that's the case. So just a lot of really, really huge stories in this and well-written stories. You know, I think this year is a strong year for writing just in general. And so even if a movie here or there wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, I can't fault their writing. It's really been a stellar year for that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you guys. This year has been fantastic when it comes to writing. But in the terms of the two categories, this one is a little bit harder in my opinion. I mean, I have them ranked and we're going to go through them in the way that I think they should be. But this year has really been awesome with characters and really relating character emotion. And these, all these films in this category really do a great job of bringing their characters to life, because they were based on a previous work. And like you said, Joker and Little Women, these are characters that we've seen before. And Jimmy Hoffa, you know, Jack Nicholson back in the day. But they really reinvent them, and it does a really good job. We're going to break down the movies right now. So we're going to start off with the one that I think it might not get a whole lot of love, and that's going to be The Two Popes, and Craig's going to break that down for us.
Oh, it should get all the love in this category.
I agree.
And, you know, and we'll talk about who should win and what will win, blah, 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 later. But The Two Popes, extremely well-written, very dialogue-heavy movie, character piece. It brings the two characters together in such a way that explains their worldviews. And I would just encourage you to go back and listen to our Oscar spotlight. If you haven't had a chance to check out The Two Popes, there's not really much you can spoil in The Two Popes. So even if you haven't watched it yet, maybe go listen to the cast. And I think that maybe we will compel you to the power of Christ will compel you to turn on Netflix.
It's the sequel to The Exorcist, for sure.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, no. But it's just an incredibly well-written movie and adapted from a play that I think is just really a very cool slice of life in a very odd time in the church. This is a very special time in the church's history. Hasn't happened since 1200 A.D., so just a really unique way to look at that situation and find out way more about that situation than we would have been able to otherwise. So really enjoyed that movie quite thoroughly.
I don't usually jump on, but I just have to say this. This is a film that is a conversation between two people. And you would think that would be really boring, but this movie or this film written by Andrew McCartan, it really does not do that because the dialogue is so, so good. But moving on.
Can I hop in real quick on that? And I agree, everybody should go check out your guys' spotlight on it. And I wanted to just say, you know, you guys are both Catholics, correct?
Yes.
And I describe myself as a recovering Catholic, not because of anything negative that ever happened, just kind of changing, you know, religious and philosophical views, nothing bad. Just to give my perspective on that, right? To give a little variance. I mean, I loved the movie. I loved the script. I do look on the church with fondness from my time in it. And I thought they navigated a lot of the tricky stuff that was going on with the church very, very deftly. I don't think they tried to brush over it. You know, a lot of the pedophilia issues that were going on. They didn't brush over it, but it wasn't the focus of the movie. And I thought they addressed it through the conversation the guys had in a really poignant way. And I just wanted to, you know, give that perspective on that script too, because that's I loved hearing your guys' discussion on it on that spotlight. So I loved it too. So
there's good. That's good.
Well, thank
yeah,
you. Thank
thanks,
you.
Man.
Everybody check it out. The Family Gems. Let's break down our next film. That would be The Joker or Joker. Jason, go ahead and break this one down for us.
Very, very similar in feeling as Two Popes, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Can you see why I put them together back to back?
So, yeah, Joker. I liked it. I liked the take personally, but it's a hard movie. It's when I say hard, it's just a downer. It just keeps going down and down and bad stuff keeps happening. But as far as an adapted screenplay, what I like, I think it keeps a lot of things in line with the Joker. I think the movie was written in a way with a lot of ambiguity. So the viewer has to make decisions about things. And I think, you know, is this real? Is it fake? Is he, you know, is it a mental illness that's making him think this way? Or is it actually happening? And I think that stuff ties into the mythos of the Joker, right? Because we don't really know his history. We don't really know his motives. We don't. And I think this movie continues that. So for me, as far as an adapted screenplay, I thought it did a very good job of keeping the mythos, or the more modern mythos of the Joker, alive and well.
Awesome. I mean, you know, I'm a big Batman fan, and, you know, as much as I don't want to give credit to this movie, it does tell a very straightforward story when it comes to Joker's origin story. So kudos to that, I guess. I'm going to break down the third movie, which is Jojo Rabbit, directed and written by Taika Waititi.
What was that name again?
Taika Waititi. Nailed it.
That's not what you said the first time.
Yeah.
No,
you said something else earlier.
I probably said six different variations of it. This is a story of a young boy who's living in Germany and is indoctrinated to love Hitler. This is a boy who wants to be the best German he can be, and he even goes as far as imagining a imaginary friend in the form of Hitler, because he doesn't have a father figure at home. He's war. But what's really great about this story is it shows powerful change when you learn. This is a boy who's been indoctrinated to be a cool German, and he learns what it means to have friends, but he also learns what it means to stand up for something, because his mother is trying to go against the Nazi regime, and she ends up losing her life. You can find that out during the spotlight. Or at our spotlight,
or right now.
But then it's up to Jojo to discover if he's going to carry on his mother's legacy. And that's where it's really amazing to see this type of change. And Taika Waititi does a really good job of mixing huge satire. I mean, this movie is so a satirical comedy. But it's not supposed to be taken seriously, and that's what makes it work, because, I mean, it's such a heavy topic with the Holocaust and, you know, Nazi Germany, which we are indoctrinated knows. I mean, it is bad. It's not indoctrination. We know that they did horrible atrocities, but Taika Waititi just makes it fun, and it's crazy. You think that you're sitting there watching a movie about Hitler youth, but he does a great job of bringing the comedy while bringing the human emotion to the story, and I think this is a great job of adaptation, so. My thought on Jojo Rabbit. Now we're going to move on to the final two categories. They're the two categories that some might say are the front runners, but I think we obviously have one big front runner in this category. That'll be the last one we talk about. But first up, we have the Irishman, written by Steven Zillion, and Craig's going to break that one down, despite his protests.
No, you know, here's the deal. There's certain movies that this movie was probably one of the most anticipated films of the year. And so it had a lot to deliver on. It certainly has had its up and downs, particularly within the press and how that whole thing went this summer in the lead up to the film. So by the time I actually got around to being able to watch the film, it already had an impression in my mind. But written extremely well. The character development is done in such a way that lets you basically live a life with these characters. You know, you pick up De Niro's character, Frank, in sometime in his 40s, I'm guessing, and you follow it.
It's digital.
Right, absolutely. you follow him all the way to what we assume are some of his final days. And so you truly get to see the expanse of what that is and the epic of what that is. You know, I do think that it's interesting to bring a story like this, because we all know the only thing I knew about Jimmy Hoffa is that he was missing, right? The body was never found. And so that's the only thing I could associate with him. So to be able to see this side or this version of the story, again, it's been critiqued, and people don't actually believe he's telling the truth when he says that he's the one that killed Jimmy Hoffa. But it is still an interesting tale to be told, and to bring these high caliber actors together, to bring Joe Pesci out of the woodwork, wherever he's been hanging out, and to be able to deliver these types of performances up and down the way. Even though Al Pacino is quite Al Pacino in some scenes, it is a very well put together and well done movie. And you all need to tell Lou that I said that.
I will. I will make sure to pass that along. So that's The Irishman. So we have one more film to discuss, and that is, I'm going to call this year Star is Born, just the fact that it's been adapted four or five times. And of course, we're talking about Little Women, written by Greta Gerwig, adapted from a novel by Louisa May Alcott. Jay is going to break that down.
And whatever iteration this is, I've never read the book, and it's the first iteration for me. So I appreciate you letting me talk about it. And the thing with this is, I think the reason it's the first time I've watched it, I think, you know, probably in my past, a little too much machismo going on to dare watch a movie called Little Women. and I really think that's why. And I loved it. I really loved this movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. All the girls in it are great. But as far as the screenplay goes, I loved the dialogue. It had a touch of the way they would speak at the time. It wasn't crazy thick with old timey speak, if you will, but it had touches of it, and the comedy and the banter and the love between the family was great. And actually the little, not just their family, but the little community that the four girls and their mother developed was just such a tight-knit family. And anytime they needed anything, everybody was there. And I absolutely fell in love with that. And then, you know, the non-linear storytelling, you know, the flashbacks, besides some directorial choices of not getting younger actresses, I think from a story perspective, I thought it worked very well. You know, she'd flash back to a scene in the girl's youth to show why something was happening later on in their lives. I thought that worked very well. Like I said, barring the choice not to have younger actresses play the younger version of the girls. But that's why I wanted to comment on it, just because I've never seen it. I have no experience with this movie. And this is one this was one of the movies I was kind of dragging my feet to watch. And I wanted to watch it again once I finished it. I was very surprised at how much I liked it.
I think that's a really good take too, because the critique of this film, at least in kind of award circles and things, has been that film reviewers have felt if you are not aware of the source material, it jumps around a bit too much to be able to follow the story. And I didn't get that at all either. And, you know, I hadn't read Little Women. I had seen bits and pieces of the 1994 version of Little Women, but never in full. And so, I don't think I agree with that assessment that you can't be a new audience for this and go in and see this film for what it is.
Yeah. The only thing for me that made it cloudy was the actresses were, it was the same actresses in their 20s as when they were teenagers. That's the only reason that I found it a little confusing. But once I figured out, oh, okay, they're just playing the younger version. Because I was like, why is that 20-something-year-old throwing a hissy fit? Like, oh, it's the little girl version. Okay.
So that, to me,
was a weird choice not to get child actresses in there. But from a story perspective, I'm with you. I thought it was fine. I thought it was perfectly fine.
My wife has seen every adaptation of Little Women, and so has a coworker, and they both have stated that this is by far their favorite adaptation. I think it does really, really well. So that does it for us breaking down the nominees. At this time, we're going to talk about movies that we thought should have been in the adapted category, and then we'll break down who we think should win and who will win, we believe, on Sunday. So first up, snubs. Jay, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't. you may be able to throw my least favorite Toy Story movie in there, Toy Story 4. It was a good movie. It was a solid movie. It has insanely good reviews. And Toy Story 3 was a best adapted screenplay as well. So maybe that one, but it wasn't as strong as the other iterations of that movie. So that would, I don't want to steal your thunder because I think you got the big one. So that's the one I'll throw out there is a maybe Toy Story 4.
All right.
I would say for me, and this isn't one that I've had the opportunity to see yet, but it's really interesting. I work with a lot of students in my job, and one of the classes that a lot of them are taking right now, they were just assigned the book Just Mercy, and they were told to then go watch the movie. And so it's really interesting, like talking to them and getting their impressions of this. And they all said that it's an extremely powerful piece, both the book and also the movie. So it's odd that that movie didn't get anything. You know, when Michael B. Jordan is on the rise and
James
Fox is out there, and you know, by all accounts, he was just being like super charming at all these awards functions beforehand. So the fact that it got snubbed from, I don't think it got any nominations.
Nothing, did it? Nothing.
Yeah, like literally nothing. And I, you know, I haven't seen the movie yet. It obviously looks from the trailers that it's Oscar bait type of movie. And so the fact that it got nothing, it blows my mind. And so I think maybe something like adapted screenplay would have made sense for at least a one nomination for that film.
Yeah, me and Jay had talked about that before. You know, you took forever to get on. What Jay was alluding to, the movie I think definitely got a snub here. Got a lot of snubs this year. I'm going to say Avengers Endgame, and that the wrong comic book movie was nominated in Joker. And the reason why I say Endgame is not only the fact that it can be based off of comic books, you've got 21 other movies that it bases itself off of. This is a movie that brings everything and everyone together to this one point. And not only is it adapting comic book storylines, but it's adapting all the other movies and bringing it all together. And I think that, you know, this is kind of a travesty that the fact that this did not get nominated and something like Joker did. Now I get that Joker is more on a heavier tone and kind of aligns with what Academy voters are used to, but this movie was the top box office earner and it deserved some love, and I think this would have been the perfect category for it.
It's a complex knot they had to tie together. We say it like kind of obviously, but man, when you really think about the accomplishment that is to pull every one of those, and not only pull them together, but there's like references to like all of them,
20 other movies,
which is crazy. That's crazy that they did that. So. Yeah, I think you're right in a big way.
Craig, thoughts?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's silly that we're in this world where now the Academy feels like they're acknowledging superhero films by doing things like Logan is a super depressing superhero movie, so we can nominate that. Dark Knight Rises, as good as it is, I think it's one of the best comic book movies ever made. Very dark in tone, so we can nominate posthumously Heath Ledger for that. Joker is, in my mind, I haven't been able to say this on a podcast yet, I don't think. In my mind, Joker works really well as a Norman Bates origin story, just as well as it does as a Joker origin story, just because it seems like they forced the Joker part of that on it. It didn't need to be Joker at all. It could have been called Arthur and been just the same kind of Oscar Beatty movie.
But it doesn't make $1 billion.
Well, no, and that's the thing. Is so the fact that it's forced on, especially something like adapted screenplay, like, come on, like they didn't adapt any story of Joker. Like they made their own thing about a guy with some pretty heavy mental illness and then called it Joker. I mean, the Academy should have thought of some way to recognize Endgame, even though we know that it wasn't their type of film. That could have been, you know, back in the day, we just did an Oscar Beyond the Mouse, and we talked about the Thalberg Award, which generally goes to some kind of producer of film, and Walt Disney won that for a lifetime achievement. Wouldn't this have been great year to give Kevin Feige that award? And I know that his lifetime is not done, but Walt actually got that same award really early in his career. He got it in 1942, only a few years after Snow White came out. Obviously continued to make movies for decades. but like something like that, some kind of recognition for Kevin Feige to have brought this all together. It's severely lacking. You know what's going to make me mad? Because this is what they did to Wonder Woman a few years ago. They're going to mention Avengers Endgame in nearly every segment of the Oscars because they know that it was a big movie and they're trying to grab an audience. So they did things during Wonder Woman, even though they didn't nominate it for much of anything. They had Gal Gadot go do a bit with Jimmy Kimmel, and they had, you know, like here, oh, Wonder Woman was here this year. It was the women in film, and they didn't nominate it. So I predict that there's going to be a lot of that towards Avengers, towards the MCU, towards Endgame. They're going to be mentioned a bunch and have no recognition for it.
And yeah. I think that's weird. If you look back, there's a bunch of movies that are, you know, blockbuster movies that used to get nominated for Best Picture. Star Wars nominated. Well, like, Raiders was nominated.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, E.T. And it's like, yeah. What happened? Where did they flip it? Where they're just like, no, it must be only this.
Well, I'm positive this has been brought up on some other cast, but Lou is the one I think that brought in that article or that tweet that said this is the first time the highest grossing box office earner is not listed as best of all time is not listed as best picture. You know, so it's just really interesting.
I mean, Avatar got it, yeah. So
that's adapted from Ferngully.
Is it?
Okay,
we are just going to wrap that way.
We're about to wrap up here, but before we go, we like to say our thoughts on what we think should win and what will win. Jay, what are your thoughts on who should win and who will win?
I'm up in the air. Well, I think who will win, I think, is Little Women. She was able to change it after multiple adaptations. Like I said, has some old-timey dialogue, but it's fun dialogue. It's uplifting for women. I think it's a great script. I think it'll win. I also want it to win, but I also want Two Popes to win. So I'm hoping they both win.
The elusive tie. All right, Craig, what do you think? Who should win? Who will win?
In my heart, I would love for, you know, a lot of times the Academy is thinking of ways to spread the wealth. And Two Popes, by all accounts, according to articles on Gold Derby and things like that, was very close to being the 10th nominated Best Picture. And so in the perfect world, you give it to Two Popes because you'll have some way to spread the love around to other films. However, I do think that because of the director snub and because of everything else going on around conversations about women in film and the fact that I don't know that Little Women is going to walk away with much of anything else. So the same argument might be made that this is the one Oscar for Little Women as it would be for the Two Popes. I think that Little Women will win. But I'm not going to fault that. I mean, I think that it would be, I think it would be ridiculous if Joker won. I think that that's the only one that would be like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? You know, but outside of that, I think any of them winning in this category, this could be the only Oscar for The Irishman. You know, like there's several movies that for some reason or another, even though they went in with a full head of steam, might not end up picking up a lot of trophies on Oscar night.
I mean, I agree in the fact that, you know, known for Spread Love, if anything, Little Women can definitely get costume, but Joker and Irishmen are also nominated for that. But my should win is the Two Popes. I think the dialogue in there is expertly crafted and it's brought home by two expert veteran actors. But it doesn't lose pace, especially with the delivery. So my should win should be the Two Popes. But I think with the fact that Gerda got snubbed for director, they are going to give it to her for adapt because they're going to be kicking themselves if they don't. Because she is a fantastic director and writer, and she deserves it. So my will win will be Little Women. So that's going to wrap it up for our discussion about adapted screenplay. Before I turn it over to Craig for the plug for next Sunday, during that plug, the hosts of the Front Row Network are going to be putting together their Oscar will wins. But the best part twist to that is we're also going to do our head versus heart. you know, are we going to, you know, we have to vote with our head. That's going to be our final choice. But it's going to be interesting to see who got so close with their heart choices, like we have been saying with the two popes. We would like to see that. So that can be seen on our page. And I'm hoping that it will be shown or updates will be given at the event that Craig's about to talk about.
Yeah. So for the second year in a row, the Oscars have decided to not have a host. So we will continue to be the host for you in Springfield, Illinois at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. So this is our second annual Oscar party. Come dressed up to the nines if you want. Come in your pajamas. We don't care. We are going to give away some prizes throughout the night. For best dressed, and we're going to be doing some trivia and just some fun, just commentary in between the different categories and whatnot. And just a fun way to watch the Oscars in a room with several other people and just enjoy film, you know, for the night. So the doors will open right around 6:30, and that's when the fun will begin. And then, of course, the telecast begins at 7 o'clock and it ends at God knows when. So but we'll be here for the whole thing. If you can't join us, you listen wherever you are, you can follow us on social media, because the folks that are on the front row that can't make it into town, they're going to be taking over the Twitter account. They're going to be taking over a lot of our other social media. But also, we're going to do live updates from the Oscar party every commercial break. So follow our Facebook page in particular, because that's a lot of fun. You never know who is going to pick up the microphone and just start talking about what just happened at the Oscars. So we're excited to have that on, going on again this year. Minimal cost. I want to say it's either $8 or $10. Probably should have looked that up before I got here. So
$10
and
$2 online fee.
Vanessa's going to kill you. And you could get tickets by going to hcfta.org, or you can call 217-523-ARTS.
Thank you, Craig. That wraps up our very first Oscar category breakdown with adapted screenplay.
Ryan swears he gets better after this.
I do. I do get better. Jay can attest to that. you will be getting an Oscar category a night as we move towards Oscar night. And of course, you know, next Sunday, the big night. But that is going to do it for us here at the front row. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me is
Jay Hoffman
and Craig McFarland.
And that'll do it. And we will see you next time at the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.